shots and I won't blink. I never really care what the f*** these niggas think. I got deep pockets, I swear my shit's on sink. I and he mad as hell, big zoo up all she sing. I and he mad as hell, big zoo up in her dreams. I when he mad as hell, when they sex she scream for me. I big zoo up, what the nigga should be. I baby, won't you come my way? Got something I want to say. Can I keep you on my brain? But first off, I'ma start by saying this. I all headshots if you think you can take my boobs. I and I'm too tough when I shoot, swear I won't miss. I baby, won't you come?
You want, and I might put you on, just mine, can't you see, and I rock 17, all these knots in my jeans, me and Zoo, turning up, got your boo in the cut, and she suit, cause it's looking like the roof, going up, counting all this bread, I don't talk to fans, trying to take my bump, you gon' take two to the head, this baby, you the baddest, all this money, I'ma cash in. And I'm swerving all the traffic.
Swerving all the traffic.
While I'm trapping out the mansion.
Trapping out the mansion.
And I'm moving through the chopstick.
Moving through the chopstick.
Do 200 on the highway.
200 on the highway.
And I'm swerving in my eyes.
Swerving in my eyes.
Baby, you should come my way.
Baby, won't you come my way?
Hey, let me ask you something. Would you seat your 3-year-old child on a windowsill? Would you seat them beside a lit fireplace or by the deep end of a pool? One last question. Would you seat your child in a car seat that's not correct for them? Car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Secure their future. Seat them in the correct car seat. For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
.1102 in Smithfield, Rhode Island, day 21, episode 3 of The Kennel with Pat and the Cat. Pat Poos on Tristan Hobbs with you here on WJMF 88.7 HD2 and bit.do/WJMF radio. Cat, how are you?
Hey, Pat, how you doing?
Doing fantastic on this chilly Tuesday.
Blue skies, though.
Early, late morning. Yeah, blue skies, which is fine. Windy, though, and when I woke up this morning, it was just frigid. Cold this morning by far this fall.
Busy weekend.
Really busy weekend.
Strange weather we had.
Really strange weather. Downpoured on Friday, and then Sunday the winds were about, 40 miles per hour? It was...
And it downpoured on Saturday before the football game, but then stopped at kickoff. So
immediately.
That was nice.
Once the game started, it stopped and didn't rain for the rest of the game. We really
lucked
out. Then
rain once the game ended.
Yep.
We battled through it.
We battled through it. So did the teams. They battled through it as well.
I don't remember our overall record. It was pretty good. I think we only lost one game?
Two games.
Only one home game?
The draw, men's soccer.
Yeah.
Yeah, just one home game.
That's pretty good.
Very good.
There was eight?
Eight contests.
So 6-1-1?
Yeah, 7 on the campus of Bryant, and Brown had hosted one as well. That was field hockey, winning, earning a share of, clinching a spot in the MAC tournament. Really impressive with a victory over Siena.
First time since 2013.
Yep.
One of the cool things, Jess Fleet, senior, on senior day, her first career goal.
Outstanding.
Broke her arm earlier this year, coming back from injury.
It's amazing she's still playing.
Yeah, Jess does a good job for her. She works with our Bryant Sports Network, so it's good to see Jess. I just saw her and congratulated her, and she was fired up about scoring the game winner, or scoring a goal on senior day.
Yeah, absolutely. And men's soccer, tough battle against St. Francis University, really good team in the NEC.
Always fun
strong
to watch
defense.
Those teams play.
They go at it. They have some heated contests, and they've had in the past, and certainly Sunday was no different. 1-1 draw there, and women's soccer on senior day. Tough 1-0 loss, but still have a chance to make the NEC tournament with one game remaining. They play this Sunday at Sacred Heart, so it's going to be a fun weekend and week ahead.
And don't want to forget, swimming and diving, they swept a weekend. They swept PC on Friday night, and then they swept Maine on Saturday, their first home meet. I guess that kind of leads us into our first guest.
Does lead us into our first guest, as you alluded to, swimming and diving off to a strong start. And our seventh guest total on the series of The Kennel with Pat and the Cat, joins us in studio right now, and that is Ben Schulte.
The Olympian.
The Olympian Hello. Himself.
The ben, Romanian welcome. Olympian. Is that Guamanian?
Guamanian, yeah.
Guamanian Olympian, Ben Schulte. This is a historic day for the kennel patch. Just three episodes in.
Historic day.
We're making history.
We're already making history. I don't think it's ever happened before.
Ben, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So Ben, just start off telling us about how the season's gone so far. You guys off to a 2-1 start. The women undefeated, opening the season with an impressive victory at Boston College, and then as Tristan just alluded to, two wins over the weekend, being Providence and then Maine. How's the team swam so far, and yourself as well?
Yeah, everyone's doing really good. Like, the women undefeated so far, three meets in a row. It's great. And the men 2-1 can't have a better start.
Ben, what we're really having you here for, though, is talk about the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest here. You got to carry the flag of Guam at the opening ceremony. Did you know that was going to happen? When did you find out, and what was that experience like?
I found out on the Thursday night. So the opening ceremony was Friday, I think. I knew that they were going to announce who was going to be the flag bearer all day Thursday. They said it was going to be a surprise. We were going to have a team meeting on Thursday night. I was thinking about it all day because I knew there was a chance for me, but I didn't know if it was between me or Peter Lombard, who was our cyclist. And then when I saw my chef de mission's mouth start to mouth like Ben, I was like, oh my God, I got it. And so I was so hyped all day Friday. I was so excited. I was all smiles and laughing and everything. And then as soon as we walked out and they called out Guam, I knew the entire world was, like, watching me, and my face just went, like, flat, like, poker face, and I didn't know what to do. Like, I was so nervous, but inside I was so ecstatic, yeah.
Was there any sort of, did they give you any tips on how to hold it, how to wave it?
No, there was no advice, nothing. And so they, like, just handed me the pole, and this pole was, like, heavy, and it was really big, too, really tall, and so I was holding it at the base, which is also why I was really nervous, because I didn't want to drop the flag in front of the entire world. So, like, I had to hold it, and I had to kind of, like, twist the pole as I was going because I didn't want the flag to get caught at the top. So there's a lot to think about, a lot of responsibility being the flag bearer.
What point of your walk was the coolest part? Was there a part where you got to in the walk that you were like, oh, my God, and looked around and said all of looking into the stadium and seeing the thousands of people?
I think the best part about that opening ceremony march was right before they said Guam, because like we're kind of standing under the stadium in the back, and we're all like filing through. They're marshaling us through, and there's like a big opening, and you can see the entire stadium, all the people, and all the lights, and all the dancing and everything. And it's just such a rush, like it's nothing. Like I can't really explain it. And then you walk out, and they call Guam, and then you get all nervous because the world's watching.
Was the waiting process difficult? Because obviously they did it by alphabetical order and in terms of the Brazilian alphabet. Mm-hmm. Was the waiting process difficult for you? Just knowing that you were the flag bearer, just you waiting weeks, months, if not to carry that flag. Was that challenging? Just sitting there waiting to make your appearance?
Well, no, I didn't know. I had no idea that I was going to be the flag bearer until maybe like, or didn't have an idea that I could be at the flag bearer until maybe a couple days out. So I wasn't really like waiting for months. But the actual night, I thought the Brazilians did a really good job keeping us. We were in like a mini stadium next to the Maracana Stadium. And they had us just like waiting there. They had a lot of entertainment there. And then they just followed us through one by one out into the main stadium. And I actually thought it went really fast because in London, they had us walking the entire time, and we were on our feet for like 6 hours. And swimmers typically don't do the opening ceremony because it's so taxing on the legs. But in Brazil, they had us like in seats and everything right up until we had to walk into the main stadium.
So as you alluded to, you're a two-time Olympian.
Yeah.
Maybe describe some differences or things that you loved about being in London and then being in Brazil.
I think in London, I was really young, really naive.
Were you 16?
I was 16, yeah. And I feel like I was more of a fan in London than an actual, like, I didn't see myself as an athlete. Just because, like, I was, like I said, 16 and looking up to all these people and just, like, being, wow, like, I'm here. And I was like getting autographs and getting pictures, and you could tell some people were used to it and some people were getting annoyed by it and everything. But in Rio, it was a little different.
You need the autograph.
Yeah. I got Michael Phelps, Ryan Lochte, all those. I got Novak Djokovic too. Oh. But then in Rio, I feel like I was much more mature, much more focused on why I was there.
Did you learn anything from both experiences? And obviously, you know, Rio, much different place than London. Not just in terms of the opening ceremonies and then your experience there, but also, you know, in the water, competition.
Yeah, totally, of course. So in London, I did the 10-kilometer open water. It's about a 6-mile.
That's a lot of swimming.
It is a lot of swimming.
I haven't ran 6 miles.
I don't even think I've run 6 miles, but I swam it. And with that, I learned something about, like, myself, because it's such a long event, and I was way back from the rest of the field.
You got a nickname from that.
Yeah, I think it was Benny the Brim or something like that. Yeah. I don't know.
People loved you for being able to finish it off. You were young, and you finished the open water swim.
Yeah, I had, like, a standing ovation or something. but every stroke, I wanted to, like, quit, just, like, forfeit, right? But then I tell myself, no, I'll just get to the next buoy, and then I'll quit. I'll put my hand up. Mm-hmm. And then I get to that buoy, and I'm like, no, I'll get to the next buoy. And so, like, knowing that I can do that, just, like, keep going, even when you tell yourself you're going to stop, but then you keep going, it's something that I can take on for, like, the rest of my life, right? Like, I actually understand now that when you think you've had enough, you haven't. You can keep going. And then that was my London experience. And then in Rio, we have, like, a thing called a taper. I don't know if you guys know what a taper is in swimming. It's when you, like, do all this hard work for 15 weeks and then back off for the last 3 weeks because then your body rests and it gets all, like, amped to go fast.
Our swimming and diving programs do a great job of that here.
Of course, yeah. Katie and Chuck do an awesome job with that. The 2 weeks that I was in Rio before my race, I wasn't swimming well. My stroke wasn't feeling on. I wasn't getting the connection to my muscles and everything. And I was really worried. And I was really nervous. Even the marshalling room, like 5 minutes before I was supposed to walk out and step on the blocks, I was saying, this isn't going to go well. But then I got out, walked out, and saw the stadium and saw how many people were there, saw how amazing the pool was, looked up to the... and all that negativity that I've been thinking for the last 2 weeks kind of just got washed away. And I was able to get up and I saw my best time, set a new national record. And so that taught me that, yeah, you can feel bad through taper, but that doesn't mean that you're going to go bad in your race. Like, you don't, my coach Katie, she was always telling us, you don't need to feel good to swim fast. And yeah, I totally understand that now.
How did you feel about your swim? How did you feel about competing in an event? Now you weren't in the open water. Now you were in the pool. Mm-hmm. It had to be a little bit different.
Yeah, I've always been a breaststroker. I've always been a pool swimmer. But in London, the opportunity presented itself to be an open water swimmer, so I pursued that. But then I went back to the pool, and I'm so happy I made the change because I love what I do now.
Now, it seemed from some social media that it was a prolonged vacation at some point for you. Yeah. What was it like exploring Brazil and exploring South America and whatnot?
Yeah, I was really lucky that my Olympic committee allowed me to stay from the beginning right until the end. So my race is on the 6th, and most countries send their athletes home after a couple of days. But yeah, the Guam Olympic committee was like, you can stay all the way through until the closing. So I had about 2 weeks just to, like, chill and watch everything else. And being an athlete, we got free tickets to everything. And I saw as much as I could and explored Rio, loved the city. I really want to go back. It's a beautiful place, and, yeah.
Not taking anything away from conference competition and Northeast swimming in general, but is it not really a letdown necessarily, but is it easier for you to swim coming back to Bryant based on, you know, your experience in the Olympics, swimming on a world stage and against, you know, the best of the best?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Is it easier for you to swim against conference competition and teams like Maine and Providence, having been to the Olympics and experiencing, you know, being on a world stage and swimming against the best of the best?
No, it's never easy because, like, yeah, I've been to the Olympics, but that doesn't mean I'm the best. There's always going to be people better than me. You don't know year by year what kind of swimmers, what kind of athletes these schools are pulling in. There could be a stud freshman that comes in for Ryder, who's our biggest competition at the MAC championships. And so I'm never comfortable. I'm never relaxed. I never take it like for granted. I understand that when we get to the MAC championships in February, that there could be some new transfer freshman that's better than me. And I'm totally, I'm not opposed to it, but like I'm always think that